prosecutors began laying out the state's case this morning.
This case, of course, gained international attention when it happened.
The interest in this story was immediate, it was intense, and it was sustained.
It occurred to me what this case is really about. It is about a mother's worst nightmare.
State police were desperate to find missing mother of five, Jennifer Doulos.
I'm Tony Aiello. I'm a reporter with CBS News New York. It was May 24th, 2019. Jennifer Farber Doulos disappeared from her home in New Canaan, Connecticut.
Every script has three acts, doesn't it? The first act was the premeditation and killing of Jennifer Doulos.
Was there a particular area of the house that you focused on?
The garage was of importance.
Blood-like substance, blood spatter throughout the garage.
There's some back here, too.
Where's Jennifer Doulos? To this day, that question can't be answered.
You know, then obviously you learn that she's going through a contentious divorce.
Fotis Doulos, by all accounts, very charming, athletic. I mean, they made a beautiful couple.
She told me he is having an affair, and I have proof.
Where is she? Where is she?
Investigators taking a close look at her estranged husband, Fotis Doulos.
In January of 2020, he's charged with murder.
Fotis, what do you have to say to this murder charge?
At exactly the time Fotis Doulos was due in court, officers were seen running into his Connecticut mansion. Reportedly attempted suicide by carbon monoxide poisoning.
Fotis Doulos was declared dead tonight.
The investigation did not die with Fotis Doulos.
Police believe Michelle Traconis helped her boyfriend, Fotis Doulos, get rid of his wife. She's now charged with conspiracy in the murder of Jennifer Doulos.
You're gonna do the right thing, Michelle, and help the cops?
The second act was the cover-up through the destruction of evidence and the defendant's lies.
Why did you tell us things that you knew were false?
I was in shock. I was nervous.
They threatened her. They scared her. They lied to her.
Prosecutors say they'll prove Michelle Traconis conspired in the crime and helped Fotis Doulos dispose of evidence.
The evening that his estranged wife, Jennifer, disappeared. You see Fotis Doulos putting black garbage bags into the trash can.
Michelle did not know what Fotis Doulos was up to.
She was in love because at the beginning he was this amazing guy, but it turns out he was this monster.
Never been on a jury, didn't know what to expect. And when I saw Jennifer's bloody shirt, it really had an impact.
This defendant hated Jennifer Doulos.
I know that everyone wants answers, but my sister's not the right answer.
She's another victim of Fotis Doulos.
And now we've reached the third act.
She doesn't know anything, but she's innocent.
Except she doesn't get to write it. You write the third act of this script with your verdict. What's the ending gonna be?
Aaron Moriarty reports the conspiracy to murder Jennifer Doulos.
It was one of the most anticipated trials in recent memory. The state of Connecticut versus Michelle Traconis. A case that has haunted the family and friends of Jennifer Doulos for nearly 5 years.
I wanted to be there every day because Jennifer couldn't be there. And I wanted to be there for her to bear witness.
Longtime friend Carrie Luft was in court every day as prosecutor Sean McGinnis and Michelle Manning presented their case. That Michelle Traconis conspired with her boyfriend Fotis Doulos to murder his estranged wife and then helped him cover up the crime.
This defendant was undoubtedly part of this plan to kill Jennifer Doulos. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about it.
As the defendant listened in Spanish, her first language, her attorney John Schoenhorn described her as just another victim of Fotis Doulos.
There is nothing to suggest that Michelle had any clue about what was going to happen in New Canaan on May 24th, 2019. Michelle simply did not know.
May 24, 2019 started like any other day for Jennifer Farber Dulos, with the usual organized chaos of getting her five children, 13 and under, dressed and off to school. But shortly after 8:05 a.m., Jennifer vanished.
She was scheduled for a dentist appointment later that morning in New York City.
She never made it to her dentist appointment.
Then Connecticut State Police Sergeant Kenneth Ventresca would become one of the lead investigators.
People couldn't get a hold of her.
On the stand, the children's nanny, Lauren Almeida, recalled her gnawing sense of dread.
The second I called Jennifer, it's like my stomach just sank, because she never not answered her phone.
Lauren took the children to wait at the home of their maternal grandmother, Gloria Farber, in New York City. The 88-year-old Mrs. Farber says she waited for her daughter to come get them.
Did Jennifer show up at your apartment that day?
No.
Have you seen your daughter Jennifer since she failed to meet you at your apartment in New York City on May 24th, 2019?
No.
By 7 p.m., all-out panic set in. Lauren called the police.
We told the police that a mother of five was missing and that she was in a very contentious divorce.
Officers quickly discovered Jennifer's abandoned suburban SUV in nearby Waveney Park.
The tailgate was backed up against this tree. The Suburban was not running, keys were not in the ignition. You could see the cleanup of the blood-like substance all over the passenger side under a flashlight.
Police are not sharing much information as they search.
New Canaan police launched a massive search.
All I want to say is, Jennifer, we love you, and we are doing everything we can to bring you home.
Sergeant Ventresca says the one person who didn't seem worried about Jennifer was the father of her five children, her estranged husband, Fotis Dulos.
Did he help at all in the search?
No.
Did he seem concerned about his wife as time went on?
No, never seemed concerned about his wife.
It wasn't always that way. They met in college, Jennifer, a writer and playwright from a wealthy New York family, and Fotis, an international water skiing champion raised in Greece, both students at Brown University. It turned romantic some 17 years later, after a chance meeting at the Aspen Airport.
What did she like about him? Eventually love about him?
Well, you know, he was a really charming person. He was very handsome. He was smart and funny.
And an ambitious real estate developer and builder of luxury homes.
Hi, I'm Fotis Dulos, and I'm the owner of Four Group. We're custom builders working primarily in the Hartford and Fairfield counties.
Fotis and Jennifer married in 2004. Soon there were five children, two sets of twins, and then a little daughter. Lauren says Jennifer loved being a mother.
She would sing to them and laugh at them, and she never raised her voice. She was just, like, incredibly nurturing.
The growing family moved into one of Fotis's opulent homes in Farmington, Connecticut, a suburb of Hartford. They had all the advantages money affords and an emphasis on sports, especially water skiing. But the marriage was increasingly rocky, says Lauren.
So I was in one of the kids' rooms and we started to hear screaming, and Jennifer ran through the bedroom door. Fotis was yelling and she closed the door behind her and pushed her body up against the door, and he was trying to get in. And her face was just, she was terrified.
By 2016, Fotis was away as many as 10 days a month, often chasing the latest water skiing competition. On a trip to Miami, he met Michelle Draconis. The Venezuelan-raised single mother was Fotis's type. She rode horses, reported for ESPN in South America on snow skiing, and even more to Fotis's liking, she was a competitive water skier, Michelle's sister, Claudia Marmol.
He was charismatic. He was into sports just like she was. He was a loving father.
Soon, Fotis and Michelle began an affair. It didn't take long for Jennifer to put two and two together.
Through email and receipts, she found out that he went on a trip to Utah with Michelle and a friend of his and his girlfriend.
Jennifer later told Lauren she confronted Fotis and he admitted to having the affair. That was it. She devised a secret plan to take the kids and move out with Lauren's help.
She was afraid of what Fotis would do to her or with the kids if she filed for divorce while they were living under the same roof.
But Jennifer did file for divorce, took the kids, and moved into a rental home in New Canaan. Michelle and her young daughter moved into Fotis's house in Farmington.
She fell in love with him, and they had a very amazing relationship.
It would turn out to be one of the biggest mistakes of Michelle Traconis's life.
Where is she? Where is she?
They showed up every day, friends of Jennifer, somber and respectful.
We did need to just bring her presence, the love for her, into the courtroom.
For Jennifer's loved ones, there has been no body to mourn, no grave to visit. Her remains have never been found. For prosecutors, it added another set of challenges to an already difficult case. To prove beyond a reasonable doubt that Michelle Traconis conspired with Fotis Doulos to commit murder, they first had to prove there was a murder, and then that it was Fotis who murdered her. But 8 months after Jennifer vanished, and long before a trial would begin, Fotis Doulos took his own life.
I always thought this trial was against a ghost.
Prosecutors essentially brought Fotis back to life by focusing on the day Jennifer went missing. They presented what investigators had found at her home.
When they go to the house, they go in the garage, they notice blood-like substance.
There's some back here, too.
Sergeant Ventresca and Detective John Kimball of the state's major crime squad were summoned to the scene.
There was evidence that someone had attempted to clean up blood. There would appear to be swirl marks on the sides of the vehicles.
A serious violent assault occurred in that garage. I mean, there's definitely some sort of foul play involved.
Within hours of searching the house,
I mean, it's up here too.
Investigators learned Fotis had a possible motive. That contentious divorce, something Jennifer expressed in court documents. He is dangerous and ruthless when he believes he's been wronged. He must always win at all costs. And there was little doubt that Fotis was losing. He had spent thousands of dollars in legal fees and court costs. His business was floundering. And worse, he lost shared physical custody of his children.
I don't think Fotis liked to lose in any aspect of his life, and I don't think that he liked to be losing in court at the hands of his wife.
The day after the mother of his children disappeared, Fotis was summoned to the New Canaan police station.
Did he agree to sit down and talk?
No.
But they got something more important than an interview. Police took Fotis's phone. They tracked it to Albany Avenue in Hartford around 7 p.m. the evening of May 24th, roughly the same time Jennifer was reported missing. It turns out there were security cameras all along Fotis's route. New Canaan police officer Thomas Patton couldn't believe his eyes.
What do you see?
Well, as he was driving around, he was depositing black garbage bags in various receptacles.
And is he alone?
No, in one of those pictures, you can see a female that's leaning outside of the passenger side of the truck.
Turns out that the female reaching for the sidewalk was Michelle Traconis. Within days, a team of detectives was dispatched to go digging through the trash.
Some of the things retrieved were used zip ties with human blood and DNA of Jennifer Doulos on them, female undergarments, a Vineyard Vine shirt in the size that Jennifer wore.
At trial, for the first time, they showed those bloody clothes.
I think it was really important that they did that. We had seen photographs of that evidence, so I knew what it looked like. But being in the same space, and time as Jennifer's clothes, just really drove home that she's not here.
On June 1st, 2019, 8 days after Jennifer vanished, both Fotis Doulos and Michelle Traconis were arrested for tampering with or fabricating physical evidence and first-degree hindering prosecution. They still did not have enough for a murder charge. Fotis refused to talk to the police, but Michelle gave the first of three interviews.
What's the red stuff?
Officers made it clear Jennifer was not just missing. She was murdered.
Basically, here's a fact. Mm-hmm. Fotis killed Jennifer.
No.
Okay? Mm-hmm. This is a fact. We know this. We need to find Jennifer.
Officers were trying to figure out if she knew where Jennifer's body was.
If you had to get rid of a body which was no longer one piece, mm-hmm. where would you go?
Me?
Or where do you think Fotis might go? Okay, I'm not saying you. Where would Fotis have gone to take either Jennifer or parts of Jennifer to get rid of her?
I don't know.
Michelle insisted she didn't know anything about a body. She also gave Fotis an alibi. She told them he was with her at home that morning at 4 Jefferson Crossing.
Fotis wakes up too. When I go to the bathroom, I brush my teeth, I get into the shower.
Mm-hmm.
Fotis jumps into the shower with me.
Mm-hmm.
Probably it's a 5-minute shower.
That statement would come back to haunt her. Both Fotis and Michelle were released on bond and ordered not to communicate with one another. Fotis stayed in his glittering mansion at 4 Jefferson Crossing. Michelle moved into her own apartment and would forever be branded as the other woman.
I'll be honest with you, you're probably one of the most hated women in America right now.
Days after Jennifer disappeared, investigators found papers at Fotis and Michelle's home that they came to believe were actually alibi scripts. A timeline, say prosecutors, that Fotis Doulos and Michelle created to keep their stories straight.
6:40, wake up, alarm, and then took shower together.
That timeline became central to the state's case, not only for what was in it, but for what wasn't.
The cops asked her, why wasn't Hartford in your timeline? Oh, I was gonna write that, but I got interrupted. Isn't that a coincidence? Isn't that convenient?
Prosecutors set out to show what they say is the real timeline, starting in the early hours of May 24th, the day Jennifer vanished. Surveillance footage shows a truck leaving an empty house that Fotis had renovated for sale.
A red pickup truck was seen leaving that residence, headed towards Route 4 at approximately 5:35 hours.
Sergeant Kenneth Ventresca, who thinks Fotis was driving, tracked the pickup truck heading towards New Canaan, where Jennifer lived.
We eventually located a red Toyota Tacoma pickup truck driving southbound.
The Tacoma was spotted 2.5 hours later, shortly before 8 a.m. in New Canaan, near Waveney Park.
This is where he had parked it.
Investigators believe Fotis had brought a bicycle with him, and that's him biking the last 3 miles to Jennifer's house.
He came over in the back road over there. He waited for her to drop the kids off at school. She came home in the morning. She enters the garage. That's where the violent assault occurred in the house.
prosecutors say that while Fotis was killing Jennifer, Michelle was back at their house, providing an alibi. Fotis had left his phone at home and prearranged a call with a friend from Greece. Prosecutors believe Michelle picked up the call to make it appear that Fotis was home.
Make no mistake, she knew exactly what she was doing when she answered that phone.
Prosecutors claim Michelle then moved it around, locking it and unlocking it to continue to show activity.
Now, the only person who could have reasonably manipulated Fotis Doulos' phone that morning is Michelle Triconis. This is the conspiracy.
During the time prosecutors say Michelle was manipulating the phone, Sergeant Ventresca believes Fotis was cleaning up the crime scene.
Yeah, it didn't sit well with me, especially because it's like a pattern here.
And then put Jennifer's dead or unconscious body in the back of her Suburban and drove it away.
And then her vehicle was left about 3.5 miles away down on Lapham Road near Waveney Park.
Just 100 feet from where police say he had parked the Tacoma.
There's storm drains down here.
Investigators could not account for the next 40 minutes.
We searched all this whole area.
It's possible Fotis used that time to get rid of Jennifer's body. But they think it's more likely that he was transferring incriminating materials from the Suburban to the Tacoma.
If he had things to move, like a lot of bloody clothing, could have taken 40 minutes.
What happened to Jennifer, they don't know. What we do know is that the Tacoma returned to the empty house at 12:22 p.m. After that, Fotis met Michelle for lunch.
Did you ask him where he was that morning?
And that's because prosecutors say she already knew. That afternoon, Michelle brought cleaning supplies and garbage bags to that empty house for sale, 80 Mountain Spring Road. Michelle says she and Fotis were preparing for a showing the next day.
So what do you think was happening that afternoon at 80 Mountain Spring?
I think that the evidence that was found in Hartford was being bagged up.
The prosecution showed Michelle driving back and forth to the house where she lived with Fotis. Prosecutors believe she was burning evidence.
And there appears to be smoke coming out of the east chimney. Who's lighting a fire on Memorial Day weekend? Better question, who's lighting three fires on the Friday before Memorial Day weekend on a day like that? The surveillance shows her going back and forth repeatedly. 5 minutes at a time, 9 minutes at a time, fire, fire.
Please state your name and spell it for the record.
Paolo Gumendi.
If the prosecution had a star witness, it was Fotis' employee, Pavel Gumiani, who turns out to be the owner of that red Tacoma.
Good morning, Mr. Gumiani.
He described a conversation he had with Michelle a month before Jennifer went missing. Michelle was upset when she learned Jennifer would not let the children say goodbye to the family dog before Fotis had him put to sleep.
What exactly did she say?
Can I use bad words?
Yes.
She said David should be buried right next to his dog.
But perhaps Pavel's most damaging testimony concerned his pickup truck, that Tacoma, which he says Fotis took without permission. He says he showed up at the house where Michelle and Fotis were cleaning. He wanted his truck back, but the keys were gone.
What did Mr. Doulos say to you?
He says that Michelle has a key.
Michelle had already left the premises with the keys.
She takes the keys to the Toyota Tacoma to prevent Pavel from taking the car for the weekend. After all, they need more time. They haven't gone to the car wash yet.
Michelle returned with the keys and Pavel took his truck home. But 5 days after Jennifer disappeared, Fotis finally took the old beat-up Tacoma to the car wash. Michelle met him there.
You can eat off the floorboards in this truck. That's how clean it was by the time we got it.
But Fotis made one major miscalculation. He asked Pavel to remove the two front seats of the Tacoma and find replacements.
He was growing angry and he keep on saying, like, you gotta do it, you can you do it?
Pavel, who was later given immunity, did remove the seats, but he handed them over to the police. And sure enough,
on the passenger seat, there was a blood-like stain on the fabric of the seat.
And this general error.
Which was cut out, tested at the lab, and it came back to Jennifer Dulos' DNA blood. And that was paramount for this investigation.
They finally had enough evidence to arrest Fotis Dulos for the murder of his wife. Michelle Traconis was arrested for helping him plan the murder. The two would never see or speak to each other again.
What do you think is the most damaging evidence against Michelle Traconis? For a closer look at the case, go to 48hours.com.
Day after day, Michelle sat in the courtroom with her family behind her. She showed little emotion, other than a few tears.
Let me say something about not showing emotion. If we smile as we're coming into the court, everything she does, someone's going to comment on that.
Michelle, out on bail, left court quietly each day, but her family was outspoken.
She's a mother, a daughter, a sister, and just an amazing human being, and we know that the truth will prevail.
Her father, cardiovascular surgeon Dr. Carlos Traconis, and sisters Claudia and Daniela, spoke to 48 Hours in 2020. Then, as now, they refused to believe that Michelle could have been involved in Jennifer's disappearance.
What makes you believe that your sister had absolutely nothing to do with this?
How we were brought up, our principles, just that she's never been a violent person.
She wouldn't harm anybody.
Sometimes women do ridiculous things for
love.
Not
my sister.
That's not Michelle.
Other woman, but not
Michelle
my sister.
Michelle will never harm anybody, anyway.
Michelle's attorney, John Schoenhorn, says she was fooled by Fotis Dulos.
Fotis Dulos lied to Michelle.
It appears that he did on more than one occasion.
According to Michelle, Fotis told her he believed his wife had run away, something he claimed she had done in the past.
I said, what? What do you mean that she disappeared? And he said, don't worry. She started in the past. She went to Aspen and she changed her name 20 years
ago.
False. I'll tell you what he told me.
Schoenhorn says Fotis was also lying to her that night he was dumping bloody evidence on Albany Avenue in Hartford.
And you're saying she had no idea what was in those bags that Fotis was getting rid of?
She not only did not know what was in those bags, she had no idea what he was actually doing. He had invited her to go out to Starbucks. Practically the entire time she's on either WhatsApp, texting, or making phone calls during that whole time.
No. Do you know what was in the bag?
No, my mind is always like construction things. Even maybe, I don't know, the cleaning from the house, I don't know.
Okay.
Claudia, speaking on behalf of her sister after the trial, says it wasn't unusual for Fotis to dump construction debris in public trash cans instead of paying for a dumpster.
I had gone in 2018 and he had done it in my presence, so it was very common for him to do that.
But prosecutors portrayed that footage of Michelle leaning out of the truck as something nefarious. They told the jury she was purposely giving cover to Fotis while he dumped two altered license plates down the sewer.
While they opened the door at the exact same time, conveniently at the right time to block the view from the tan car.
Michelle says it was an innocent gesture.
But you're actually leaning out at one point of the car.
No, I told him. I had a chewing gum. I took it, I spit it.
Okay.
And my hand got sticky and I went like this. And like this to clean.
Okay.
The state's case was built on speculation, not facts, says Schoenhorn. Take that smoke rising from the fireplace.
She would have fires going in the fireplace all the time.
Remember, my sister lived in Argentina before. So it's very common to put the fireplace on and to just sit around, have your wine. And my sister would do it.
And in fact, says Schoenhorn, the police brought in cadaver dogs, but they never found any trace of evidence in the fireplace.
What was she burning in that fireplace? Firewood.
As for those missing keys to the Tacoma, Claudia says Michelle told her that the keys had been left out in the open, sticking out of the door of the truck.
Culturally, we don't trust. We always lock doors. We always lock houses, everything. So she told me she took them because of how we are, that she's just not going to leave keys hanging from the door.
Schoenhorn says that not only is there an innocent explanation for every one of the state's accusations, but his client's willingness to help speaks volumes about her involvement or lack of it. She not only gave three interviews, she walked the police around the grounds near Fotis' house to help them look for Jennifer's body.
We think you have information that can help.
I love John, but I can walk the whole world with you if you want, do whatever you want, but I can't do it.
If, in fact, your sister knew where Jennifer's body was, wouldn't she have try to make a deal with that information?
Of course. My sister is not the person that the media has portrayed, that the police and the state have wanted to portray. My sister would have said it. She would have stood up.
In the end, Schoenhorn says her good intentions to help police worked against her. It was Michelle's apparent contradictions in those three interviews that seemed to incriminate her. At the time, Michelle had a different lawyer. Do you wish she had never talked to the police?
Let's put it this way. I would never have put my client in that situation when she was under arrest.
Fotis jumps into the shower with me.
Remember, in the first interview, she said she and Fotis took a shower together the morning Jennifer disappeared. But she changed that story in the second interview. She told officers she didn't see Fotis at home that morning.
First time you told us that you were in the house and woke up, you took a shower with Fotis. Now you didn't take a shower with Fotis.
Okay.
So this is all going to come out and it makes you look like you're not telling the truth.
This is how she later explained it.
Why did you tell us things that you knew were false?
Okay, I was in shock. I was nervous.
Police and the prosecution were convinced Michelle had helped plan an alibi, including that call Michelle picked up on Fotis' phone. But Claudia says there's an innocent explanation for that, too. It turns out that Fotis' friend, attorney Kent Mawinney, was at Fotis' home office at 8:26 a.m. when Fotis' phone rang.
She was with Kent Mawinney in the office, and Kent was actually the one that signaled to her, aren't you going to answer the phone? So then she did.
But why didn't Michelle mention that phone call to investigators? She never mentioned that phone call in the first two interviews. She never mentions it until the third time. Why not? Was she trying to keep that from investigators?
No, because again, I don't remember verbatim every single thing that I did. So our memory can fool us. And just because she didn't mention it doesn't mean that she was hiding it.
Schoenhorn called to the stand a memory expert, psychologist Elizabeth Loftus, to explain the changing stories.
People with a lot of life stress are not going to be, their memory is not going to be operating optimally.
Next, he called Viorica Marion, a professor who specializes in the relationship between language and memory. She testified that Michelle, who you'll remember listened to the trial in Spanish, had only medium proficiency in English.
Does that play a role when you're asked to retrieve or recite something that you had encoded in your memory?
It can.
After 3 days, the defense rested. Michelle never took the stand. It was time for the attorneys to present their closing arguments to the jury.
In my mind, I thought, is there an innocent explanation? Because you want to get it right. I don't want an innocent person to go to jail.
Go behind the scenes with the 48 Hours Postmortem Podcast.
When jury selection began in the trial of Michelle Traconis, Jennifer Farber-Dulos had been missing for 1,594 days. For Carrie Luft, the courtroom became a place to pay homage to a friend whose absence has left an unbearable silence.
I was there to be a presence for Jennifer.
After 6 weeks of testimony, it was finally time for the attorneys to sum up their cases in a narrative, a story, no longer than an hour. Their chance to put all the pieces together. We met up with John Schoenhorn as he put the finishing touches on his closing arguments.
I feel apprehensive, but I feel that we have a good shot.
The following morning, Jennifer's five children, now 17, 15, and 13, and living with their grandmother, sat in the gallery as the closing arguments began.
All rise.
They wanted to support their mom. They wanted to support their grandmother. And they wanted to know what happened.
Are the parties ready to proceed?
Yes, Your Honor.
Prosecutor Michelle Manning was the first up.
This trial is very simple. It's about a conspiracy and about a cover-up. It's about Michelle Traconis' actions and about how she and Fotis Doulos conspired together to murder the woman who was standing in their way.
It is, and I will say this multiple times, speculation. It's conjecture. It's guesswork, which is not the standard of evidence in a criminal case here.
Prosecutor Sean McGinnis delivered a powerful finish using one simple word, coincidence.
I want to just pose these questions to you as you head into your deliberations. Is it really just a bunch of coincidences? Is it just a coincidence that the defendant answered Doulos' phone at 4 Jefferson Crossing when he was murdering his wife in New Canaan? Is it just a coincidence that Doulos' phone is being moved and manipulated when only the defendant is home? Is it just a coincidence that the defendant travels with Doulos to Hartford as he disposes of the evidence on the same day? Is it just a coincidence that the defendant brought black garbage bags to Eighty Mountain and Jennifer's shirt and bra were found inside black trash bags?
For alternate juror Patrick, who wanted us to only use his first name,
mother being taken away from her children,
the prosecution's closing put weeks of testimony into perspective.
Where it all came together really was in closing arguments. That's when it all made sense to me. And really up to that point, I'd entertained both sides in my head.
As an alternate juror, Patrick was released before deliberations.
Thank you.
After a little more than 2 days,
the jury has reached a unanimous verdict.
The jury sent word to the judge.
Will the defendant please rise? State of Connecticut versus Michelle Traconis. What say you, Mr. Foreperson?
Guilty. Guilty. Guilty.
What did that feel like, hearing guilty?
Well, I held her arm, and I could just feel the energy leave her body. Everything was dead silent.
Everything just stopped at that moment.
Yes.
And it was really stunning. And I guess I mean that in the physical sense of being stunned and just sort of hanging on every word.
Patrick says he agreed with the verdict, including the most serious charge, conspiracy to commit murder.
What makes you believe that she helped plan it?
I think the totality of the evidence, not only what I thought she was deceptive in her interviews, but even just absent of that, the moving around of Fotis's phone in the morning, the answering the phone call, covering for him, even if there was an explanation for it, that certainly shows that you had some reason to do that.
The Traconis family spoke to the press after the verdict.
And we continue standing here because we too care to know the truth of what happened to Jennifer. But we don't know what happened to Jennifer. And choosing and putting my sister as the guilty person is not the right thing to do because she's innocent.
Thank you.
For Jennifer Farber Dulos's family and friends, it was the verdict they had hoped for, but it did little to ease the anguish they feel every day that she remains missing.
And that's what's the most painful. We don't know. We don't know where she is.
Do you think you ever will?
I don't know. We'd like to find her and bring her home. If that doesn't happen, doesn't change our love for her. She's in each of our hearts. She's in her five children. You see her face in Gloria's. So, you know, Jennifer's still here in so many ways. But I think it would bring some peace to be able to let her rest in peace.
Michelle Trakonis is expected to be sentenced on May 31st. She faces a maximum of 50 years in prison.
Join me Tuesday for Postmortem from 48 Hours, where we'll dive even deeper into today's episode and answer your questions about the case.